Off we are to the races. This is where we were. Goel HaParchet, we had spent some time last week going through the beginning of Parakhet. Hopefully we'll finish the Parak today. That's my goal. We went through the beginning of the Parak. We talked about the kind of internal conflict between the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim, but so far we focused primarily on the response reaction of the Yirei Elokim. And he talks about Ein Adam Shalit Baruach Lichloat HaRuach. Maybe that's what you were referring to. Ve'en Shalton B'yam HaMavet. Anytime he talks about Ruach, in the context of life and death, you have to remember, just to come back to the question that was asked just a moment ago, Ruach can certainly be wind. Ruach, Sovev Sovev Halecha Ruach. We talked about that at the very beginning of the Perek. But if you take a look at the end of Perek in Kohelet, Perek Yud Aleph, Kohelet is makes it very clear. Actually, it is pasuk. Here he talks about Shomer Ruach Lo Yizra. He who observes the wind won't sow, and he who regards the clouds won't reap. That's certainly wind in the sense of weather pattern wind. But if you look back at the end of, sorry, Perek Yud Bet, where he says, he describes, and we're going to learn Perek Yud Bet by itself. I don't want to get too much into it because it's one of the most dramatic and powerful chapters in all of Tanakh. But he describes in great detail this process of aging and dying. And at the end, he says, V'yashov v'yafar ala aretz kishehaya, tashuv el Elohim asher nitana. Dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. And the ruach there clearly referring to ruach hachaim, the spirit of life, which returns to God as the person dies and the dust returns to the earth. So in Kohelet, he uses the terms both ways. We'll see why that's important for our discussion momentarily. But in our parak, he talks here about the notion of Ein Shulton B'yam HaMavet. There is no person has no power over the process of death, the day of death. Ein Shalit Baruch, you cannot contain. There's no power over the wind, which I would translate here as spirit, meaning spirit of life. Just as there is no control, no power over death itself. Ein Mishlachat B'Muchama. You cannot send a delegation, peace delegation, in the midst of war. War being a subset of Yom HaMavet, and at that moment, Lo Yimalet Resha et Baalav, the wicked or wickedness shall not escape its master. We're going to come back to that phrase in a moment, and that's really where we left off, actually. And I
Why
want
can't the
to.
wind? Why can't the wind here be like a metaphor? Because he's comparing that you cannot stop the wind like you cannot stop death. So, or you
It
cannot
doesn't
have
matter.
peace
It doesn't
during this.
matter. I don't want to get too bogged
Doesn't
down
matter.
in the question of how to translate it. It can be a metaphor, it can be literal. It doesn't matter. At the end of the
Okay.
day, what I'm interested in is what's his subject matter? His
Right.
subject matter is you cannot control death. He'll get to the issue of the spirit returning to God. Kohelet is one of the few places in Tanakh where he explicitly articulates a deep and profound faith and belief in the notion of an afterlife, a spirit that is eternal that returns to God. I showed you that verse at the end of the book. It's very clear. It's at the core of the philosophy of the Yirei Elokim. He hasn't said it explicitly yet. He's alluding to it here. He'll make it much more explicit there at the end of the chapter, at the end of the book. But I think he is saying here in this context that there is no escaping in the same way he says at the beginning, Dvar Melech Shilton, right? It talks about Shlita Shilton. God is powerful. We are less powerful. We do not have power over life and death. God does. And he comes back to this notion of Eit Umishpat. There is this notion of judgment for all men, for all creatures. L'chol chefetz yesh Eit Umishpat. But man's evil is great, and therefore there is a need for there to be judgment. Shomer mitzvah lo yedat avara, he who keeps the commandments will not know anything, any harm. Ve'et umishpat yedalev chacham, man, a wise heart will know judgment, l'chol chayfetz ish edu mishpat, constantly referring back to this notion of mishpat, and I think that that comes back to his core message, which is pasuk gimel, al tibahel mipenav telech. You cannot escape from God. That's his whole message to the Chacham. You cannot escape from God. Ultimately, every single person will be forced to face God, whether in this world, in terms of God's accounting for his actions here, which we saw back in chapter 5, Gavoa Me'al Gavoa Shomer, or in this context, in the moment of death. A person cannot escape God because he cannot escape death. And ultimately, Ein Adam Shalit Baruch, L'chloa Taruch, you cannot contain the spirit, you cannot control death, you cannot stop it. It is a process that every human being will reach. That is the definition of mortality. And therefore, we will be held accountable for our deeds. So if to summarize the message of the Yirei Elokim at this point, his message is essentially twofold. Number one, to the Chacham, whose philosophy was basically learn to live with a kind of accepting everything as mediocre, just kind of go with the flow. And he says to him, you know, the Chacham wanted to ignore, wanted to kind of look at death as a kind of a way of defining, you know, a corruption or a mistake from on high, and therefore you have to just live with it. Don't be too righteous, don't be too wicked, right? Just live with it. And says the Chacham, says the Yirei Elokim, on the contrary, the fact that there is death means that every person is accountable before their creator. And if every person is accountable for the creator, they need to recognize that they are accountable for what? They're accountable for what they do here. And therefore they have to live each day as if they are in the recognition that they will eventually meet their creator. And that's his core message, is that you have to live each day with the recognition that we are accountable for our actions before God. And so it starts with this declaration of Al tibal mipanav, don't be hasty, don't think you can run away from him. Every person is mortal, and therefore will meet his creator at some point. We'll see that in other prophets, in other works of writings of the Nevi'im as well. And at the same time, in the same breath, he says, Ki l'chol chefetz yesh et u'mishpat, there is accountability. And there is that combination between that sense of accountability before God in the next world and accountability before God and his partnership with man in this world. Well, that concept of it, we will explore in a few minutes. Let me just go back again to a similar message that he writes at the end of chapter 11 and 12. Here again, he says, let's go back to chapter 11 for a moment. The end of chapter 11, where he says, "Smach b'chur b'yaldutecha v'tivcha libcha b'mei b'churatecha." I won't get into the proof of it, but these are certainly the concluding words of the Yirei Elokim. Young man, rejoice. Be glad if you feel that you need to follow your heart, follow your eyes. However, if you choose this path, know one thing. Vida. Ki al kol eile yiviacha elokim b'mishpat. Know that God will bring you to judgment and accountability for everything you do. And that's the core message of Kohelet. That's in chapter 11. That's what sort of sums up his whole message. And then he gets into, in chapter 12, the description of the process of death. Remember, it's one passage until he reaches that Pasuk Zion where he says, when will that happen? That'll happen when the Spirit returns to God who gave it. And then without getting into the question of the suffix of the postscript to the Kohelet or not, but in the end he says the same thing in the last verse of Kohelet, ki et kol maaseh ki et kol maaseh ha'alokim yavi b'mishpat. For everything that happens in this world, God will hold them accountable. Every person will be accountable for God, before God, and that comes back to the same message that is essentially what he's saying here. So before we move forward, I just want to take a half a second and recognize that a couple of sessions ago, I don't remember if it was 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, we kind of looked at a attitudinal approach of each of our primary voices to the question of how they deal with death. Remember that we said that Kohelet deals essentially with two primary themes throughout the book. One is good and evil, Ra v'Tov, and the other was life and its purpose, given the fact that we are mortal. Right? How do I give meaning to life with the shadow of death hovering over us? And we saw that in the very first chapter, and we saw that later on, and we connected that to the two trees of Gan Eden, Eitz Hadaat and the Eitz HaChaim. And what we said was that there was a certain, actually, this part I can stop sharing for a second. I'll go back to sharing in a minute. What we said was that there was a certain common or a certain approach that each of the primary personalities of Kohelet took to the question of how do we contextualize death? The Nehenatan, the hedonist who wants to run through life and enjoy as much as he can, essentially ignores death. He basically says, what I don't see, I'm going to ignore. I don't see it. It's not part of my reality right now. I'm alive. I'm going to ignore death. He'll say it much more explicitly in the next chapter, where he talks about, you'll forgive the intensity of the language, a kelev chai, that a living dog is better than a dead lion. Because the living lives, and the dead lion is dead. Absolute fatality of death. He so ignores it. He says, we're alive, we just live with it. His language was, who can possibly bring a person to see that which will come after them? The Amel tried to conquer death. He tried to overcome death. He tried to create a sense of mortality, if not through himself, then at least through his actions, through his import, through his impact on the world. He talked about the society, Melech, the notion of or a Yoresh, or an heir, some kind of continuity that would, at least on some level, create an immortality around the person. Machutam Mishalash lo b'meray yinatek. The Chacham, who essentially resigned himself. Death exists, and therefore it kind of levels the playing field of mediocrity. Everything is mediocre because everything is temporary, and therefore it doesn't matter. A little bit of righteousness, a little bit of goodness, a little bit of Chacham's kind of philosophy of you just accept the world as it is. He's going to back off that in a little while, but for now that's where he stands. Miyuchal taken et asher ivto, he said, who can fix that which God perverted, meaning, or man perverted, meaning that which is crooked, which is death. Comes along the Yirei Elokim, and now for the first time, the Yirei Elokim addresses the issue of death head on. And he argues that there is a purpose, there is a utility that we can achieve by recognizing that death is part of our life. And that is to live each moment recognizing that we are accountable before God. And so it infuses deeper meaning into what we do now because I live with the reality of death in existence. Pi melech shmor, guard the words of the king. You could even divide up the world of Kohelet into two groups. The Amel and the Nenatan who essentially refuse to accept death. The Nenatan who refused who sort of embraced the now to ignore death completely, and the Amel who tried to conquer it, but who refused to accept the consequences that it is a reality. Whereas the Chacham and the Amelim are not so far apart. They both acknowledge that it exists. The difference between them is how it impacts life. To the Chacham, makes my life almost meaningless, and therefore you kind of just go with the flow. And to the Yirei Elokim, it makes life all the more meaningful because you now have to live every moment with the recognition that it's part of a journey or part of a context in which we are then held accountable. And that's the core piece of this. You can't escape it. And it, meaning death, brings accountability or mishpat before God. In a certain sense, I'm going to go back to the share screen for a second. In a certain sense, let's take a look at Pasuk Tet, because Pasuk Tet, depending on how I read it, we were up to Pasuk Tet. We're going to start Pasuk Tet. Depending on how I read it, may add a depth to this discussion. Et kol zera iti v'natonet libi l'chol ma'aseh she'nasa tachat ha'shamesh. I applied all of this to the work that to that which is done under the sun. Et asher shalat ha'adam ba'adam l'ralo. To a time when one man overpowers another to his own, to his detriment, to his hurt. Meaning, there are times in this world when men are cruel to one another. And therefore, that is hevel ala, that is something that needs to be recognized as an evil in the world. Who's articulating this message? Now, before I answer that question, next pasuk. Uvechein, indeed, ra'iti rishaim kvurim vavau mimukom kadosh yalecha v'yishtakhu be'ir asher ken asu gam zehavel. Indeed, I saw a wicked that were buried, that came, that are walking, and coming, kvurim vavau, who had come from holy places. They went, they were forgotten in the city, they did this. We'll talk about what this verse means in a moment. Asher ein nasa pitgam ma'aseh ra'am mehera, because sentence against the evil is not done quickly. Al kein malei lev bnei adam b'hem lasot ra. Therefore, the hearts of man is set to do evil. So, in these last two verses, and we're going to explore them and break them down phrase by phrase in a moment, clearly the Chacham is speaking. Right? This is already the reaction of the Chacham. And a very cynical one at that. What's happening in Pasuk Tet is debatable. I could read it as a kind of a beginning of the words of the Chacham. I see what you're saying, but at the end of the day, man can be very cruel to man, and it's not helping him. The fact that there is this mishpat, the fact that there is this judgment, is not doing anything for man. On the contrary, he's just becoming more and more wicked because there's no accountability in this world. What are we waiting for? We're waiting for what, 120? So that's one possibility. The other possibility is this phrase, Et asher shalat ha'adam ba'adam l'ralo, man overpowers man, meaning one is on top of the other in a hierarchy of control and power. The only other person in Kohelet who spoke of a hierarchy in any context was the Yirei Elokim, back in chapter 5 when he talked about Gavoa Mel Gavoa, the hierarchy of God and the king, who partners, a society, who partners in maintaining this world. And if, in fact, he's recognizing this notion of a hierarchy within society that is evil, not like the hierarchy of God and man, which is constructive, but the hierarchy of power in society, which is evil, et asher shalat ha'adam ba'adam l'ralo, if that's part of the message of the Yirei Elokim, then what he's essentially saying is there are two kinds of partnership. There are two kinds of hierarchy in this that exist. There is a hierarchy which is designed to create accountability in this world. Man, courts, judgment, society. We partner with God, God through providence, man through society and power and authority, and we do the best we can to create a better world. That was what he said in chapter 5. Al titma lachefetz, don't be dismayed if you see perversion of justice, because gavoh me'al gavoh shomer, there's a partnership. And now suddenly he comes along and he says, there's another kind of mishpat in this world. This lachol chefetz ish etu mishpat sounds very similar to what he said in chapter 5. Al titma lachefetz, don't be dismayed, because there is mishpat where, in this world, through the partnership of God and the king. So why suddenly is there another kind of hierarchy, and why suddenly is there another kind of mishpat, not in this world, but in the next? And the answer is, I think, in the context of Kohelet, Kohelet, the Yirei Elokim recognizes that there's a flaw in the argument of chapter 5. The argument of the, in chapter 5, what he said was, actually, let's pull it up for a moment so we can see the text. In chapter 5, what he argued was, if you see oppression, if you see violence, if you see the perversion of justice in this world, don't be dismayed, because there is a hierarchy, higher than, over high, meaning two different levels of authority, earthly king, godly king, and together they, and they guide the world, they direct the world, they are in charge together of assuring mishpat, but they're assuring mishpat where? In this world, in society as we have it. That's the partnership, that's the purpose of the mitzvot. It's fascinating to observe the fact that nowhere in the Torah, in any of the mitzvot in the Torah, and in any of the Sukkim of the Torah, is there ever a concept or a conversation about accountability before God and the world to come? It virtually is not a conversation anywhere in the written text of Tanakh as a whole, with the exception of Kohelet. The conversation in Tanakh is always about how we perfect or change or improve the world we live in, this world. What happens after death is a closed book. And so why suddenly is Kohelet so, if we give the word, obsessed with this idea that there is accountability before God in the next world, when the Yirei Elokim is the one who introduced accountability in this world? And I think the answer lies in the fact that there is a recognition here, for the first time that we've seen, that it's an imperfect system. Even in the world of the Yirei Elokim, it's an imperfect system. There is man, there is society, there is Melech, there is God, and together there is a sense of duty. Duty in the context of Shvuat Elokim. I observe, I commit myself to the authority of the king, I commit myself to the mitzvot. And if everybody did that, we'd be living in a happier world. And we have to do our best to make sure that the world is a just and a good place. But the reality is, there is evil in this world. So, my dear Yirei Elokim, he says to either himself or the Chacham says to him, right, you've built this beautiful hierarchical system between God and man, but what happens if it fails? What happens if, for the most part, most people don't manage to get through a life of crime and a life of evil in this world? Most people will meet their maker early if they choose to live that kind of lifestyle. But there are those who live to a ripe old age and who are quite evil in this world. It's not a perfect system. So what do you do to, where's your safety net of accountability? And that, says the Yirei Elokim, is the recognition that the safety net, stage two, is an accountability after 120, is an accountability before God after death, and to which nobody escapes. Al tivehel mipanav telech, al tamod bedavara. Nobody can escape that second tier judgment before God. And that's what he says at the end of Kohelet. That's those psukim that I showed you earlier, where he talks about no matter what you choose in the world, and the parak Yud Aleph, and this is the same Yirei Elokim speaking, da ki al kol ele yivyecha Elokim b'mishpat. There is accountability for everybody. Nobody escapes that second tier accountability. If you think you can escape, just take a look at what old age looks like. It's a one-way street to ultimately to death. V'yashol v'yafar al aretz kishayya, v'aruach tashuv v'lalim asher netana. The spirit returns to God, and at that moment, yevi elokim b'mishpat, God will bring everything into accountability as you stand before God. That's the summary of the Yirei Elokim. And that idea that ultimately mortality is there as a recognition that we are A, that we are mortal, B, that we are accountable before God, is a core piece of, it's not explicit, but it's implied in the whole story of Tanakh from Gan Eden onwards. If man had stayed in Gan Eden and could live forever, he'd never have recognized the mistake of denying God's authority and God's presence. I think I once shared with you when we talked about the parallel between the temple and Gan Eden, that there's a passage in Yechezkel where he's talking about Yechezkel chapter 28, where he talks about the king of Tyre, Tzor. Particularly timely because the cities of Tzor and Sidon are going to be back in the news, unfortunately. Ben Adam emor l'nagid Tzor, say to the prince of Tzor, Ko amar Hashem Elokim, Yan gaval libecha, because of your arrogance, Vatomer, and your sense that El Ani, I am God, Moshav Elohim yeshavti belev yamim, and I sit in the seat of God in the midst of the seas. Vieta Adam v'lo El, you are man, you are not God. Vatiten libecha kelev elim, but you think you're God. Therefore, I'm going to skip the piece about Daniel because that's not relevant to us. L'chein ko amar Hashem, Yan titrat levavcha kelev elim, because you have set your heart to be as arrogant as God, to be as the arrogant as if you are God. L'chein, hinni mibi'alecha zarim, aritzei goyim, behold, I will bring strangers to you. And they will draw their swords against your beauty and your wisdom. How? And here's the key verse. Ha'amor tamar Elohim ani lifnei hargecha? Will you say, I am God, when he slays you with the sword? Says the Navi to the king of Tzor. You are mortal. You are man, not God. Every human being is mortal. Every human being has a time that they end. And therefore, says the arrogance it has no place because ultimately you do not live forever. Right? That's in the context of the argument, the pagan argument of idolatry, not our issue for now, but I just wanted to see that same idea that Yechezkel says to the king, the antidote to that sense of, I am immortal, I am going to live forever, I am godly, I am all powerful, right? The antidote is removing Eitz HaChaim, is death. And that's what Kohelet says here. The antidote is death. Because at death, the spirit returns to God, and therefore there is accountability, there is mishpat, to which nobody, and I mean nobody, not a human being in the world, can escape that accountability. So whether or not it's in this verse or in the previous verses, that's his message here, and we are going to move on to the rest of the perek at this point. So we are at the Pasuk Yud. Everybody back with me? Okay. Uvechein. And this for sure is not the Yireh Elokim. Whether the Chacham starts in verse 9 or 10 is debatable, but now we're for sure into the words of the Chacham. Uvechein ra'iti rishaim kvurim vavau. Now, there's a translation issue here, which I'm going to take issue with. So I'm going to translate freestyle, because I don't like this translation. I have seen the wicked buried and coming. Now, what does that mean? Because that is a pause. Rishim kfurim vavau. Umimakom kadosh yalech. What does that mean? So, I put the comma here after the word vavau, because that's what the trup does. Right? The trup, the little revi'i, the little trup, triangle trup at the top of the word is a comma in syntax of Tanakh, so I take issue with the translation. But what he's saying is very cynical. Very cynical. He's turning to the Chacham, to the Yirei Elokim, who argued that every single wicked person will meet their maker and will be held accountable. There is no escape. Justice will be served. Says the Chacham, wow. There's a lot of dead people walking around. Rishaim, you're talking about all these wicked people who have met their maker and will be held accountable for their deeds, for whom there will be accountability. Kvurim vavau, they're still walking around. So what have you achieved? Resurrection of the dead, I'm notwithstanding, that's not the issue. But you can keep burying them and they keep coming. Umimakom kadosh. Makom kadosh is also one of those very cynical words, because it's a euphemism for a cemetery. Makom kadosh is where you bury Rishayim, right? In our language, we call the burial society Chevra Kadisha. We call a cemetery an Atra Kadisha. But in the language of Chumash and Tanakh, a cemetery is not a place that's holy, it's a place that's tameh. Because it contains just the body, the spirit returns to God. So essentially, the phrase here, Makom Kadosh, parallels the phrase Kvurim, but in the cynical sense. Right? These Rishaim that were buried, there's still Rishaim walking around the world. So what happened? They come back to life? There are still wicked people running around. So what happened? They all came from the Makom Kadosh, from the cemetery? Everything they did in this world, all their evil. It's as if it's all been forgotten. Nobody cares. Well, we're going to start all over again. Says the Chacham to the Yirei Elokim, you want to tell me that the answer to accountability to the wicked in this world is after they meet their maker in the next world, it'll all be sorted out. Really? And that means that they're going to live to 120, and for the next how many generations of wicked people are they going to bring into this world in the meantime until they meet their maker? The wicked will outlive them tenfold. And in the end, he says, "Asher eina sa pitka masera a mehera, aken malei leg bnei adam lahen lasot ra." Here's the core of it. If you don't punish the wicked quickly, mehera, then man will simply perpetuate that evil again and again and again. What's the famous expression? Justice must be perceived, not just pursued. You can't just tell me that, not to worry about the evil in the world, because after 120, a person will meet their maker. Great. So I can do whatever I want at the age of 20. And for the next 100 years, I got a free ride. How many evil people can I influence in 100 years before I meet my maker at 120 and have to answer for my deeds? That's how you want to live the world? That's how you want to live life? You want to hold them accountable before God at the age of 120 for what they did at the age of 20? If that's true, then we've got a system that's broken. A sinner can commit a crime 100 times. And yet, he goes on and lives a very long life. And nobody holds him accountable. Why? Because you think there's going to be a safety net after he meets his maker after 120? And in the meantime, what's going to dissuade them? What's going to discourage them? What's going to discourage the next one? And the next one after that. And you get a whole city and a whole country and a whole people full of evil people because you didn't hold the first one accountable. Rishim kvurim vavau. That's the answer to that. That's the Chacham's answer to the Yirei Elokim. It's a very powerful answer. It happens to be a true answer. It's one of the reasons why the Nevi'im, and we're going to look at that in great detail in a moment, but The Nevi'im were never satisfied with the answer of the world to come as a response to the question of theodicy. There is no other, there is no Navi at all. And certainly outside of Kohelet and maybe Iov, there's no reference to the notion of accountability of the world to come. Not because it didn't exist in the language of the Nevi'im, but because the Nevi'im were not satisfied that that could be an answer to the challenge. But you're going to tell me if I come to the Jewish people in Yerushalayim and I say to them, you know what, all their suffering and all of their, or Iov. Iov, what are you complaining about? Let's take an example of Iov. Iov, what's your question about? You lost your family and you lost your wealth and you lost your position, you lost your stature. No big deal. World to come. Everybody gets their share in the world to come. You'll have your reward. 120. Think Iov is going to sit back and take it? The people of Yerushalayim, the Navi Yirmiyahu says to God, why does the wicked wail, the wicked prosper? Why didn't God simply say it to Yirmiyahu? The wicked prosper in this world because there's a next world and they'll all get sorted out in the next world. And in the meantime, the nations of the world can run rampant and do what they want and create all kinds of terrible things and do extraordinarily horrific things. Not to worry. They'll meet their maker after 120. And they'll be held accountable. I'd rather them meet their maker sooner, quite frankly. That's the core of the issue. Is you can create a philosophy that says, and that's why the Re'el Elokim is very clear that there's a partnership, right? There's two tiers to this mishpat. And we're going to talk about how is the response of the Re'el Elokim. But that second tier is useless because I don't see it and nobody else sees it. And so says the Chacham, if that's how you want to build the philosophy of reward and punishment, that you're going to throw it onto the shoulders of the world to come. So there's a lot of wicked people floating around the world that were once buried and they're still alive. If not through them, their actions, yishtakhubir, all that they did has been forgotten and then we continue to see it all over again. Because justice is not served quickly, because waiting for the next world doesn't address the immediacy and the need to see the righteous be rewarded and the wicked suffer. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a Shemoneh Esrei to say, right? Punish the wicked, reward the righteous. We just tell the world to come. It's not going to work. That's the concept of the Re'el Elokim. A sinner can commit a crime 100 times and live long. And so the system doesn't work. Now, the second half of this verse, Gam Yodea Ani, is not the Chacham continuing to speak. Now it's, remember, this conversation is going back and forth. It started with Mika Chacham, who's like the wise man, the Yireh Elokim took the microphone for 5 psukim or 6 psukim, and then the Chacham took the microphone back. And now the Yireh Elokim steals the microphone again and says, no, you're not true, you're not correct. Yodea ani asher yetov liyireh Elokim. I know for sure it will be good for those who fear God. Asher yirumu lefanav, and those who are reverent before God. V'tov lo yireh levasha. And it won't be good for the person who does evil. He won't lengthen his days like shadows. Crime doesn't pay. He will die young. The one who does not fear God. This is only a secondary to catch those few who don't manage to be held accountable in this world. But most people will be held accountable in this world and they won't live long lives. And the Chacham's response to it? He doesn't. Pasuk Yudalid is already a new speech. Meaning, the conversation here is no longer objective. It's now very subjective. The Chacham says, I see a lot of wicked people who survive very well and who do a lot of bad things to a lot of people and manage to get away with it and create an evil society. You're not helping. And the array says, I didn't see that. I see good people and I see people who are fearful of God and I see people who are wicked who are punished. And the conversation is, I see this, and I see that. Meaning, we're no longer debating, now we've reached the point at which we see different perspectives. And that's where this speech finishes. Okay? So more or less, the message here has been a discussion between the Yirei Elokim and the Chacham, specifically over the question of retribution, what we call in the literature Torat HaGemul, the theology of divine retribution, reward and punishment. Is the system working? Isn't the system working? Is there righteous people who are suffering? Are there good people? Are there evil people who are successful in their evil, if you will, if you want to call it that? Where is the accountability? Is it on man's shoulders? Is it on God's shoulders? Is it a partnership? If it's a partnership, is it working? And if it's not working, you want to rely on a second tier of mishpat in the Olam Haba? I'm not sure that's going to satisfy, says the Chacham, not going to satisfy people in this world. It's not going to be a deterrent against more evil, just to say there's a world to come. And that's where we leave off. And more or less, as I said before, that's the classic response of the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im, as odd as it sounds, the Nevi'im very much sounded like the Chacham in this conversation. Take a look, for example, I'll show you a couple of quick examples. Look at, whoops, that's not what I wanted. Now that got there. Yirmiyahu. Here's a classic example from Yirmiyahu Perek Yud Bet. The context for now, we could go into the whole historical context, but I'm going to skip it. Yirmiyahu starts, Tzadik ata Hashem ki yariv alecha. God, you are righteous. Yet I will contend with you. I will argue with you. I will strive with you. Ach Elohim mishpatim adaber itach. I have matters of deep concern, of justice in this world, that I need to talk to you. I need to express. And they start with this question. This is the Navi speaking to God. This isn't about speaking to Israel. This isn't about inspiration. This isn't about chastisement or Musar. This is God, the Navi having a conversation with God. Madua derech rishaim salecha. Why does the wicked prosper? Why do the wicked prosper? Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Shalu ko bagde vage. Those who deal treacherously are at ease. Shalom, shava. They have it easy. Those who are righteous are put in jail, like Yirmiyahu. Those who are righteous are whipped for their treason, like Yirmiyahu. But the wicked, whether he's referring to the wicked sitting on the king of the throne of Israel, or whether he's referring to other wicked, right? The wicked, they get away with it. Nita'atam, you planted them, gam shirashu, they've taken root, yalchu gam asuperi, they grow, they bring forth fruit. There's that, right? Other people who learn from their deeds, there's that words of the Chacham who says that there are even if you bury them, there are more coming. You are near in their mouth. They quote, they say the words that quote God, but they're far from their heart. And here's a verse that we actually often reverse. But in its context, this is what he's referring to. V'yata Hashem, yedatani, God, you know me. Tir'eni, you see me. Uvachanta libitach, you tried my heart. You know what I refer to. You know what I'm looking for, to achieve. Hatikem katzon tivcha v'akdishem liyom arega. Take them like sheep to the slaughter and prepare them for the day of slaughter. Referring to the evil, the wicked ones. We turned it around. Right? We turned this into a question for the righteous. Right? They thought, should the righteous be taken like sheep to the slaughter? But it's really, he's talking about the wicked. And he's asking God to help bring them to justice. Now, if it's such a simple answer to simply say to them, no, Yirmiyahu, what are you worried about? There's a world to come. There's an Olam Haba. Everybody meets the Maker and everybody will be held accountable and they can be successful in this world. They'll be held accountable in the next world. But Yirmiyahu is not satisfied with that answer. Not because it's not true. because it doesn't address the societal issues that are at the core of what Yirmiyahu is addressing. It's not going to deter another generation of evil from growing in its midst. The most famous comment against this idea of God's judgment, or God's mercy, if you will, so to speak, or tolerance of the evil, is in Yonah. Right? Read it on Yom Kippur. The reason we read Yonah on Yom Kippur is the exact opposite reason that Yonah was written. Right? Yonah wrote his words because he wanted to acknowledge that God was too merciful with the people of Nineveh. And we turn it around as a kind of a tribute to the fact that if God could forgive the people of Nineveh, he can forgive us too. Certainly could forgive us. But at the beginning of chapter 4 of Yonah, Vayera Yonah Va'agdola Va'ichalo, Yonah was disturbed terribly. And he was angry that God forgave the people of Nineveh. And he prays to God, Ve'palel al Hashem, and he says to God, Ana Hashem, take my life. This is exactly what I said when I was still on my land. That's exactly why I ran away to Tarshish to try to avoid this mission. Remember the story of Yonah? He walks into the people, to the wicked city of Nineveh, which will become the capital of the Assyrian Empire, and he says to them, in 40 days, Nineveh is going to be overturned because God is angry. They do some kind of superficial tshuva, and suddenly God forgives them. Says Yonah, Kiyatati kiyata kel chanun v'rachum erach apayim v'rav chesed v'nicham al ra'ah. I know that you are gracious and compassionate and slow to anger and abundant in kindness, and you would relent over the evil. You would take it back. You would withdraw the evil. And therefore, says Yonah, kachat nafshi mimeni. I'd rather die than see this. Meaning, that's exactly the issue. We could have easily said to Yonah, Yonah, what are you worried about? God will be compassionate to them in this world, but if they do evil, God will punish them in the next world. But it's not going to satisfy Yonah. Because his issue isn't whether or not they'll be held accountable individually in the next world. His issue is whether as a society, they are going to cause more evil in the world around them. And so all the Nevi'im, I shared with you the Medrash that says that they asked all the different books of Tanakh to summarize the core message of Tanakh. And the summary of the core message of Nevi'im was a nefesh achotat hi tamut. The sinner should be put to death. Meaning the Nevi'im desperately sought an accountability for evil in this world because they knew the consequences of an evil society growing up in their midst or around them and the evil that they could do. And so saying that there's a world to come in which everybody is held accountable doesn't solve the societal challenge. And that's exactly what the Chacham says to the Re'alik. Okay. I'm going to stop here for a minute and take a 60-second pause for questions, if there are. Otherwise, we're going to start the next piece right away, because I want to see the reaction in this in the text to what I've just shared with you now. Questions? Observations? No? Okay. So we have this debate, the Yirei Elokim and the Chacham, and in many ways, I hope I've created at least a sympathy for the world of the view of the Chacham, because that's where the Nevi'im, many of them, stood at least on the level of the question of theodicy. And then we move into Pasuk Yudalet. And I'm going to already kind of preface what's going on now, and that is that we're in a new voice. So now the question is only who's speaking, and there's really only one option left, because I told you the Amel drops out of the debate after chapter 6. So that really leaves only one option. And he says the following. Starting with verse 14. Yesh hevel asher nasa la'aretz. There is a vanity upon this earth. אשר יש צדיקים אשר מגיע עליהם כמעשה הרשעים, ויש רשעים שמגיע עליהם כמעשה הצדיקים. There are righteous for who get the fate of the wicked, and there are wicked who get the fate of the righteous. Meaning there are wicked who live lives as if they are rewarded for their righteousness, and there are righteous people who are live lives as if they're being punished for wickedness. It's a totally upside down, backwards, and systematically flawed operation. Yesh tzadikim, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked, and there are wicked to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. Amarti shegam ze av. This is vanity. And therefore, v'shibachti ani et ha-simcha. So I've taken the approach of praising simcha, mirth. She'ein tov la'adam tachat ha-shemesh ki'im le'echol v'lishtot v'lismach. Best thing to do is eat, drink, and enjoy. Eat, drink, and enjoy. And that's what you will have in your company, you in the days of life in this world that God has given you. And so for whatever number of days you have, eat, drink, and enjoy. When I applied my heart to try to know knowledge and try to understand that which is done in the world, I couldn't sleep at night. I saw the work of God, all the man's, how God operates this world, for better or for worse, and I could see no rhyme or reason or understanding in anything that was going on. A man can toil and toil and toil and not see it. And man can try to be as wise and comprehending as he possibly can, and he'll never understand it. And therefore, what is the end result? Shibachti et ha-simcha. Why is there such a balagan? Why is there such anarchy in the world? Righteous and wise, all and wicked, wise and not wise, all in the hands of God. Gam sina, gam ava, gam sina, love and hatred. Man doesn't know it. All is before them. Akol kashel akol. Everything has the same end. Mikre echad l'tzadik v'l'rasha l'tov v'l'tahor v'l'tamei v'l'zoveach v'l'asher enenu zoveach. Katov kachoter hanishba kasher shvoyarei. All things meet the same end. The righteous, the wicked, the good, the not good, the clean, the unclean, the sacrifice, those who bring sacrifices, those who don't bring sacrifices, the righteous person, the sinner, they all end up in the same place. Zevra, b'chol asher nasa tachat ha-shamash. That is an evil under the sun. K'mikre echad lakol, that one end should be for all? All right, the rest of this I'm going to skip for now. And we will come back to it, Bezrat Hashem, as we move toward the end of the parak. But I think you all get the two basic pieces of this story, which is, number one, who's speaking? That one's easy. Who's speaking?
The Chacham. The Chacham was trying to understand. But he's rejected,
in a sense, Kohelet's all four of them. So you always have to remember that he's rejecting the Chacham, he's rejecting himself. But the Chacham would never say verse Pasuk Tedvav. V'shibachti ani et ha-simcha asher ein tov la'adam tachat ha-shemesh ki'im le'achol v'lishtot v'lismoch. It's nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry.
Ananatan.
Yeah, that's just, it's not possible for it to be anybody other than the Ne'anatan. In this case, he is responding by rejecting the world of the Amal in Pasuk Yud Zayin. I'm having trouble with my mouse for some reason. Why? My mouse is not working. Computer glitches today. The laborer, the toiler, the amel can never find, achieve what he wants to build, and the chacham will never find what he tries to understand. Meaning, it's a futile effort. And it's a futile effort because ultimately, no matter how much you build and how wise you come, you become, at the end, in the grave, they all look the same. And if you want to talk about the Chacham cynicism, the cynicism of the Ne'anatan in this particular passage is off the charts. And it all starts from a crisis moment. What's the crisis moment? The crisis moment is Pasuk Yud Dalet. Sorry, I'm having a lot of trouble with my mouse and computer today. Crisis moment is Pasuk Yud Dalet. Yesh hevel ashenasa la'aretz, ashiyesh tzadikim ashemagi alehem kimaseh ha'resha'im, v'yesh resha'im shemagi alehem kimaseh ha'tzadikim. Amarti shegam ze havo. There are wicked to whom they are treated as if they are righteous. There are righteous who are treated as if they are wicked. This is vanity. Now, I want to stop for a moment and step back half a step. We've already seen that argument. Is that not the same as the argument between the Yirei Elokim and the Chacham? Were they not arguing just a few verses ago about theodicy and about the righteous who suffer and about the question of tolerance of evil in this world that leads other people to do evil and whether or not there is accountability or isn't accountability? I showed you all the psukim in the Nevi'im who similarly took such an argument to God. What's different here? It's very subtle, but it's critically important for us to understand the concept of reward and punishment, the perspective on reward and punishment in Tanakh. Something's different here. Let me spell it out this way. If I raise the question as Yirmiyahu does, actually, let me close this and close this, and maybe that'll make it easier. And close this. Maybe this will make it a little easier. If I raise the question, as Yirmiyahu does, Madua derech resha'im tzalecha, shalu kobag devaget. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why are those that deal treacherously living peacefully? What is the core of my question? Put it in classic rabbinic Talmudic language. What is the core of my question?
We don't see justice in the world.
And we don't see justice in the world, but why? What's his argument to God? What is he saying to God?
That God isn't making justice.
How does Hashem allow this to happen?
Yeah, that's what he says, but what is he really alluding at? God runs the world with two characteristic traits. Remember, if we go back to the 13 principles of faith, the 13 attributes of mercy, in the Chumash, in Shmos, coming up in Parshat Kitisa, Hashem Hashem Kel Achum Chanun Erech Apayim Erech Chesav Yamet, etc. The same argument as Yonah. What did Yonah say? Right. Let's go back to Yonah. Maybe easier to see it than Yonah. Same argument. He says to God, Al Ken Kidam Tivoch Tatichisha Ki Yadati. Ki Chanun Erech Apayim Erech Chesav V'Nicham Al Ra'ah. I knew that you were merciful and kind and compassionate and slow to anger, and therefore will relent the evil, and therefore Ninveh will have another day. What's he saying?
Rabbi, is he saying that he's not seeing it? He's not seeing
No,
the...
he's seeing it very much so.
No, he's saying that he can't tolerate God's compassion.
Correct. What he's saying is, God, you're too compassionate. You're too tolerant.
And it creates, and it, that creates its own kind of evil.
Correct. You are too tolerant of the evil in this world, God, says Yonah to God, says Yirmiyahu to God. Right? Now, hear me out for a second. I know I'm a minute over, but hear me out. When Abraham argued before God, let's look at those psukim for a second. In Bereishit chapter, I think it's beginning of Vayera, should be somewhere around. Oh, there you go. That was pretty good. Abraham is sitting at the tent. God comes to him, the famous story with the three angels, etc. Okay. Then God goes off to destroy Sodom. And, sorry, at the end of the chapter, God says, I can't hide from Abraham what I'm going to do. So he tells him he's going to destroy Sodom. Vayigash Avram Bayomer. Says Avram, Ha'avti spet tzadikim resha, you're going to wipe out the guilt innocent together with the guilty? Maybe there are 50 righteous people in the city, you're going to destroy them all because of the wicked? Chalila lacha, me'asot kadavar zeh, lamit tzadikim resha, me'yaka tzadika resha. Why? This is sacrilege, that you should do the same, that you should kill the innocent like the like a wicked. Chalila lacha, shofet kol ha'aretz, le'yaseh mishpat, judge, sacrilege, will the judge of all the earth not act justly? Is this the Kohelet argument of the Nenatan? Or is this the Yonah argument of too much compassion in the world? What is this?
This is the Abraham argument.
Which is what?
God is too harsh.
Correct. The Abraham argument is God is too harsh. God is too judgmental. What about the righteous? Maybe there are righteous despair. In other words, and here I'll conclude with this. In the world of Tanakh, I'm going to stop sharing for a second. In the world of Tanakh, the correct question is always either there's too much erech apayim and compassion in the world, or there's too much judgment in the world. There's too much din. No Navi ever asked about both. Because essentially what they were trying to understand from Moshe Rabbeinu on is which attribute of God is operating at any given time. Is it din? Is it rachamim? Is it too much compassion? Is it too much judgment? Which operates at the same time? But the Nevi'im for sure, the Nevi'im never tolerated, never entertained the possibility of an argument that said there's nobody upstairs, that there's nobody running the show, that it's a total balagan and that there's no accountability whatsoever and there's no rules, rhyme, or reason. That was never part of the conversation. It was always either too much rachamim or too much din. The Ner Natan has introduced a third element, which he calls hevel ala aretz. By the way, there's a lot of hevel in Kohelet. There is Hevel Avalim, there's Hevel Tachat HaShemayim. There's only one place in all of Kohelet where there is Hevel Al Ha'aretz. There's only one place in all of the text where this Hevel, this vanity, is what's going on in this world. And what the Nenatan says is you're both wrong. There are wicked who suffer. There are righteous. There are wicked who prosper. There are righteous who suffer. There is a total balagan. There is anarchy. There is nobody there. There is nobody home. The expression in the language of the Gemara is late din v'late dayan. There's no judge. He's on permanent lunch break. That was never entertained by any of the Nevi'im or any other context of Tanakh because that's heresy. You can challenge God about too much din and too much rachamim, but to challenge both at the same time is to argue that there's nobody home, that there's no accountability or providence whatsoever.
Rabbi,
that's
can I ask
the
a
start
question?
You may, 1 second, let me finish my sentence. Mm-hmm. That is the starting point of this last speech of the Neh Natan, and because of it, he's going to take us to a very dark places that nowhere else in Tanakh would we ever go. Now I will stop, and that's my introduction for next week. So you got to come back, figure out what's going on, and because then I'll take a question for you, from you.
Based on the statement you just made,
mm-hmm.
right, as human beings,
mm-hmm.
we're talking about an individual Kohelet with all these characters. But as human beings, don't we sometimes feel that nobody is there, depending on what we're going through?
We can feel it, but if we actually believe it, then we have crossed the line into heresy.
The heresy, yeah.
We can,
depending on what's going on in our
lives. We
can
ask the question, why is there too much righteousness or too much wickedness? We can ask the question on either side of the equation. But the assumption that there is no accountability, there is no one home, that's a denial of God. That you can't. I mean, you can, but that's not a Tanakh. That's
what
not.
What about the person that is going through so much pain that they get to that point?
That is Rosh HaVetovlo. That's one half of the equation. That's the wicked who or the righteous who suffer. That's Tzadik V'Ra'alav. That's one half of the equation. Each half of the equation is a legitimate question. Combined together, it's very dangerous. More to unpack, more to discuss. We
thank
will
you, Rabbi.
Take care of it next week.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.